Hey, everyone. Welcome into another Pipeline podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. Jonathan Mayo is in Arizona visiting the spring training team and also Team Israel, which is where he is right now, I believe, checking out some batting practice. On the podcast today, we're going to talk about the top 10 systems, except we're not going to actually talk about this year's top 10 systems because those rankings aren't out yet. But we are going to talk about the teams that were in the top 10 a year ago that have dropped out and where they stand, and also a couple of clubs that aren't yet in the top 10 but look headed in that direction and maybe there by next year. So we'll get into both of those, but I want to start with an interview that Jonathan did out in Arizona with Taylor Trammell, Reds outfielder, just 19 years old. Jonathan caught up with him down at spring training, so let's start with that interview.
You've been out here for a while already. Mm-hmm. Spring training hasn't even really started for you. Tell me a little bit about the program. The Reds had you come in early, and what you've been doing.
Yeah, they invited me to strength camp, and it's a great opportunity to get out here early. You know, get to be with a lot of the other guys out here. We're working hard, and it's fun. You know, we're here just having, the time of our lives. You know, we're playing baseball for our job, and it's fun, and so it's a great way, to build our team up together. And I think that's what, Mr. Grappi, Jeff Grappi, and Dick Williams, they're that's what they're trying to do, and it's wonderful. I'm having a time of my life right now, and I'm pretty sure it's going to pay off.
I would imagine at a certain point in time, you start chomping at the bit, wanting to actually play, games, and something. Yeah. Have you gotten to that point yet? Even understanding how important what you're doing, but when you're repeating the same thing, I would imagine mm-hmm. it's got a point you want to go out and be able to, even just getting out and hitting, I'm sure is good.
Yeah, it's fun, and I've always played two sports my whole life, right. And so it was. It's kind of like I'm kind of getting out there at that point because the only thing I did this fall was just get ready for the season. And so, I'm just anxious at the bit to, just get out here and start playing the game. And, I'm trying to, do my thing. And I know it's going to be a long season. So, I'm trying not to, go 110%, every single time. I'm trying to learn, pick the minds of, some of the big league guys, how to go about my first season, how to take on the season. And, I'm really anxious to get out there, though. I just want to get out there and face some pitchers and, get out there and shag and, get some fly balls or, steal some bases. So I'm really excited for it.
It's interesting you say you're picking the brains of big leaders because that's, to go from high school, mm-hmm. especially a guy, you said you're splitting your time so you weren't even full-bore baseball, to 140 games. Mm-hmm. That's a huge leap.
It is. It's a huge leap, but, I'm really confident in the work I put in this offseason. I really am very confident about it. I woke up, pretty much every day at 6:30, worked out around 6:45, and got my work in, hit pretty much every day, and I got myself ready for the season. I'm excited for it.
When your season ended, instruction, and you went home, and it's fall. I mean, did you have that that football itch at all? Or you think you got that out of your system once you realized that you were focusing here?
I got it out of my system. Of course, I had fun with football, but at the same time, this is my job now. I'm really focused on this. This is the game that I actually love. I really enjoy watching football, but at the same time, I don't see myself out there pretty much anytime soon. But I'm just really excited, When they told me I was coming to strength camp, I was ecstatic. I was really happy about it.
Your body's probably happy you're done with football, too, I would imagine.
It is. And, it is. I'm really excited for this season and, getting out here.
Tell me a little bit about your pro debut. I'm sure you didn't know exactly what to expect. You went out and you actually performed really well. Obviously, you always probably hope to do well. You compete. But were you pleasantly surprised looking back how that first summer went?
First summer was fun. I set high standards for myself. I set probably what most people would say impossible standards. And, I like to reach for those goals. And, sometimes, you never know, you might surprise yourself. And so that's what I really looked at. And I was really proud of myself because going into the last, the summer previous before that, before the draft, you know, I thought I was going to go to college. And, you know, going in and working my tail off my high school season and then getting to the draft and then getting picked up by the Reds, you know, it was, I was so thankful and so humbled because, you know, I worked so hard at it. And, you know, I know that it's not over yet, but that first season was just something that I was just like, I can build off it for the rest of my career. And, you know, this year, you know, I plan on having a better year than last summer. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, I really am looking forward to for the summer. And that's why I'm so anxious to get it back out there.
Now, I know your parents are engineers. Did I read that correctly?
No.
That's wrong.
My brother is.
Your brother is.
He's at Mercer University right now. Okay. He's getting his engineering degree.
Okay. And what do your parents do?
My mom, she works at my school right now.
Okay.
And then my dad, he works at the post office.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I could have sworn I read somewhere that one of those things that got put out there.
Yeah, I think someone came up to me the other week, and they were like, you tell your parents you're engineers? My parents aren't engineers. Yeah, but, you know, they work hard.
All right, well. Yeah. The question is actually the same. It's just that it's clear that they value education.
They do.
And you're saying that you thought you were going to go on to college. Mm-hmm. How difficult of a decision was that to put that aside and decide to sort of, quote unquote, enter the working world?
I took in a lot of things to consideration. I had a number value in mind with my agent and my family. And, you know, I told them, you know, if I don't get this amount or anything, you know, I'll just go to college. And I was happy about whichever decision I would have made. But, you know, that was something that we talked about as a family. My parents, they were all for the decision for me going to pro ball once the day came. But at the same time, you know, I'm going to get my education also. I value that. I feel like that could, you know, take me a little bit further. I value it. You know, I'm planning on going back, you know, sometime in the near future and getting my education.
What were you going to study? Did you know?
Really not sure. I was going to study most likely business, probably go into business management, maybe economics. Not really sure right now.
You didn't have to decide.
Yeah. But actually, in high school it was engineering, but then it was law. And then I took mock trial, and I saw that wasn't me. And so that was just a little funny story that I took in a class that I took in high school. And I was like, I don't need to take this class right now. It's not for me right now.
That's always good to be able to figure that out.
Yes.
Last thing I want to ask you, actually somebody behind the cage was talking about it. You know, if you and Tyler had gone on to school, you would have been at Georgia Tech together.
Yes. Sir.
That would have been a pretty good college team. I mean, have you guys talked about that at all?
Yeah, we talk about it a good bit. You know, people ask, you know, are you close to Tyler and everything? Yeah, me and Kyle are pretty close. Tyler and pretty close. And, you know, we always talk about, you know, what if we went to Georgia Tech? We always talk about how our, like, draft paths are kind of the same because my high school is about a mile away from his high school.
Okay.
And so it's kind of funny because, you know, we both got drafted in the first round by the Reds, and it was just really funny. You know, we talk about that all the time. It's just, you know, really funny.
I guess the Reds really like their area scout in Georgia.
Yes, sir. He's awesome. John Poloni, he's an awesome guy. He texts me regularly. He's awesome. One of the nicest human beings, you know, genuine people that you'll ever meet.
Good stuff there from Taylor Trammell. Jonathan, anything stand out to you from that interview?
Just listening to him, he carries himself not like your typical teenager. I was very impressed with his poise, thoughtful answers. You know, you never know what you're going to get from a high school-aged kid in terms of how he's going to talk, but he's very at ease with himself. Smart kid. I mean, and immensely talented. And one of the things I think that was most interesting was him talking about how he was a two-sport guy. And I talked to him a bunch of this after the interview, in fact, that he was always baseball first. And people just assumed that he would be a little more raw, as two-sport guys tend to be. But when he was on the football field, he was always thinking about what he did on the football field and how it would help him playing baseball, which is kind of the opposite of what I think we assume from two-sport guys. So that was a pretty good takeaway.
Jim, the Reds are a team that's obviously rebuilding and has some good talent in that system. How key a member of that organization and their rebuild is Trammell?
I think he's one of the key components. I mean, obviously, you're not hanging too much on any one prospect, but I think his ceiling is as high as just about anybody in that organization, to be honest. He's going to need some time to develop, but I mean, you're talking about, you know, it seems like a lot of these guys, and Jonathan alluded to this, you know, him not being as raw as people think, a lot of these two-sport guys or a lot of your speed guys, are guys who can run and not necessarily do a whole lot else. And I think Trammell has a chance to be a lot more than that. He can hit. He can run. We know that he's going to steal bases, but he can hit for average. I think he's going to – I don't think he's going to be a big-time power hitter, but I don't think he's going to be a little slappy guy. It wouldn't surprise me if he developed double-digit home run power. He can go get the ball in center field. So I think he can, be an all-around contributor and might have about the highest ceiling of any position player in that system, maybe with the exception of Nick Senzel.
We'll get into maybe some other players that Jonathan has gotten a chance to talk to. I was down in Florida and talked to some prospects as well. We'll get that to that later in the podcast, but – I wanted to move on to systems, good organizations that aren't quite there as far as being rated in Pipeline's top 10, but teams that you guys think could get there a year from now. And, Jonathan, I'll start with you. You think the Cardinals are headed back in the right direction. It's obviously a place that they're pretty comfortable having a deep organization.
Right. And, I know it seems strange to sort of pick them, given the fact that their number one prospect just went down with Tommy John surgery. But, sometimes, and I think Jim will probably agree with this, when you are the one who does a team's top 30, and I do the Cardinals' top 30, you don't even quite realize how much you like a system until you start getting through it. And if you're writing up guys 21 to 30 and you're enjoying those guys, and not because they have a good story or background, but because, this guy actually is talented. Boy, this guy's got potential. And that's what I felt with the Cardinals. Now, they're all far away. I mean, there's certain risk involved with most of the prospects, but they were really, really active on the international market last July. They spent over $10 million, which will help, I think, stem the tide or however you want to put it, to the fact that in this coming draft, they won't pick for a while. So, they've got all this really young talent. I think if you don't even need all of them to step up, but I think that if just a handful of them take the next step, and these are guys that they just signed who haven't started yet. It also includes, guys like Edmundo Sosa, Magnarius Sierra, pitchers like Sandy Alcantara and Junior Fernandez. They all have pretty high ceilings. If they all take a step forward in 2017, I'd be shocked if they're not a top 10 system next year.
So the Cardinals are a team that obviously rarely drafts highly and always manages to have good young talent coming up through the system. The Astros, Jim, are a team and an organization that for a long time or for a good stretch of years was drafting very highly and really loaded up their system and became a great, deep organization. Now, a lot of those guys have graduated to the big leagues and they've dropped out of the top 10. So now they're learning to do it the other way, I guess, to a degree, right? They haven't had those high picks the last couple of years, but there's still a system that's building back up again.
It is. And, I'll let the cat out of the bag. I don't know if I'm saying that them jumping to top 10 is any great shocking statement, because they actually came in 11th in our farm system rankings. So they were very close to being in the top 10 right now. But you're right, Tim. I mean, if you look at the number of guys they've promoted to the big leagues, I mean, they promoted a ton of guys, but just, you want to start with Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers Jr., all of whom, have big-time talent, as well as a bunch of complementary players as well. They still have a very deep system. They're going to have a bunch of extra picks this year as well from the Cardinals hacking scandal. They pick up a pair of second-round picks, lost some extra picks at the top of the draft. But it's still, to me, a very deep system. And what I like about it is they've kind of acquired the talent in a bunch of different ways. I mean, they continue to draft well, even if they're not picking at the top of the draft. I mean, they've used first round and supplemental first round picks on guys like Kyle Tucker and Derek Fisher, who are two of their best position players. But they've also drafted guys like Garrett Stubbs, catcher in the eighth round, Ramon Laureano, an outfielder in the 16th round. So, you know, they don't have to rely on those picks. You know, when you're picking a Carlos Correa at number one or Alex Bregman at number two to find some draft guys, they've really gone all in internationally. Their best prospect, I think we'll see him on the top 100 prospects list after a few graduations, so it will be pretty early in the year, is a Venezuelan right-hander named Franklin Perez. And they also last year spent a club record almost $9 million on international signees, got a bunch of really interesting Cubans, Freudis Nova and Anibal Sierra, a couple shortstops, left-hander Cionel Perez. And I think the thing they may do better than anybody else is not just trading for prospects, but trading for prospects who really haven't popped yet. I mean, their two best pitching prospects are Francis Martez and David Paulino. Those guys were in rookie ball. Paulino was headed toward Tommy John surgery when they traded for those guys. They came out a lot better than people realized. They have a first baseman they got from the Dodgers before he even played in a professional game last summer. Yordan Alvarez was a guy who the Dodgers had signed in June, and then they traded him in July to get Josh Fields. Alvarez might emerge as one of the best bats in the Astros system this year. And they also got Jonathan Araz in the I don't know if we're supposed to call it the Ken Giles trade or the Vince Velasquez trade or the Mark Appel trade with the Phillies, but they got a pretty slick infielder named Jonathan Araz in that deal too. So I think their pro scouting department does a really nice job and finds guys. You know, Joe Musgrove, who doesn't count as a prospect anymore, he's one of those guys who was promoted to the big leagues the last couple of years. He was in rookie ball too when they traded for him. I can't remember ever seeing a club, you know, scour the rookie leagues as efficiently as the Astros do and then get these guys in trades.
All right, well, we're going to move on to the highest teams from a year ago that are no longer in the top 10 this year. But before we get into that, we want to take a moment to tell you about the Fantasy 411 podcast here on MLB.com. Hot or not, pitch or ditch, deal or dump, the Fantasy 411 crew has the answer. Whether you play daily fantasy, rotisserie, head-to-head, league specific or mixed, keeper or non-keeper, the MLB fantasy crew has been there, won that, and they'll help you win too. And with draft days quickly approaching, they'll get you ready to select a winning roster. If that sounds like something you'd be into, search Fantasy 411. That's Fantasy Space and the numbers 411 in iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast, and click subscribe. All right, guys, moving on to teams from a year ago that are no longer in the top 10. And Jonathan, back to you. The Twins system has fallen out of the top 10. What's the biggest reason for that? Is it just graduation?
Yeah, just graduation, yep. You know, which is a good thing. First and foremost, Byron Buxton, the annual number one prospect for the last 27 years, or so it seemed anyway, finally did graduate. And not only, you know, did he graduate after scuffling some, but the end of last year, it looked like he was starting to sort some things out, so I'm very excited to see him in action for a full season, hopefully a healthy season, which has been his biggest problem. But, you know, they also graduated Jose Berrios and Max Kepler, and those were, you know, three of their top prospects. All were top 100 guys. So that was a big reason why they dropped out. Now, there's still some talent in that system. They added Alex Kirilloff from the draft. I'm a big fan of his, and it's not just because he's a Pittsburgh kid. He can really, really hit. And they've gotten some pitchers back from injuries over the last couple of years. Fernando Romero is a guy who I think is going to end up in the top 100 at some point this year. So there's a chance that they could climb back into the top 10, but even if they don't, it's still a solid system, not quite as deep as it used to be, but really the big reason is that those big three who graduated to the big leagues last year.
And then, Jim, the Twins were number five a year ago. They're now out of the top 10. Jim, the Rangers were number three a year ago, and they've also fallen out. Why have they drifted a little bit?
I think for the same reason Jonathan just alluded to with the Twins. And, I mean, I like to think Jonathan and I are good at our jobs, and I don't think too often we see systems we rank high just fall off the map because we were wrong about all their players. I at least I hope not. But, I went back and looked at my Rangers top 30 list from 2 years ago, and the first 13 players on that list are all gone. You've either seen them graduate to the big leagues, guys like Joey Gallo, Nomar Mazara, Chichi Gonzalez, Ryan Rua, They've traded a bunch of these guys, Jorge Alfaro, Lewis Brinson, Nick Williams, Luke Jackson, Luis Ortiz, Ryan Cordell, Travis DeMeritt, or both. Jake Thompson, Anthony Renato were traded and graduated. And that doesn't even include, because he wasn't in the organization at the time, but they had the number 4 overall pick in the 2015 draft, Dylan Tate, and they traded him last summer too. So it's just a matter of turnover with Texas. And, you know, we've only been ranking farm systems at MLB Pipeline for the last 2 years. At Baseball America, we'd done it for probably going back 30 years when I was there. And I would say this is probably the first time in about a decade that the Rangers wouldn't qualify or wouldn't rank in the top 10 farm systems in baseball, which is just a tribute to how they've continued to churn out prospects year after year after year. Now, when I think of the Rangers, there's two things that always jump to mind with their farm system. One is that they have about as strong international presence as anyone. And you can't necessarily do that on an annual basis anymore with bonus restrictions, because if you spend big 1 year, you have to wait out a couple of years, and the rules have changed again this year. But you look at their top 30 now, the current top 30, and the top 4 prospects all are product international signings, and they have 16 international signees on the top 30, which is probably right up there with just about any team in baseball. But, you know, top 4 guys are Leody Taveras, the outfielder from the Dominican, Venezuelan lefty Yohander Mendez, Panamanian right-hander Ariel Jurado, and Dominican first baseman Ronald Guzman. And then the other thing that jumps out to me with them is that the Rangers, I think, and I like this, I think it's a good strategy. They're not afraid. You know, some teams that don't necessarily want to go high risk, high reward, will do it in moderation. The Rangers are all in on a high risk, high reward strategy. And I just think they look at it like, one, they believe in their ability to develop players and polish them up, and, you know, they could turn that high risk into the high reward. And two, that if you do hit on those guys and they pay off, the payoffs are huge because of the ceilings on these guys. And I think two examples of that in the system are Alex Spies, who, you know, needs to harness his stuff, but, you know, has nasty fastball-curveball combination, very athletic. And then outfielder Jairo Barrios, who is up and down and seems like gets off to slow starts and picks up in the second half. But Jairo Barrios, you know, might have about as good a combination of, you know, raw power and arm strength of just about any player in the minor leagues. I mean, it's probably 70 raw power, and it's 70, maybe it's an 80 arm. So, you know, the Rangers are kind of up to what they've always been doing. You know, they've just, I think the last couple of years have been more aggressive trade-wise than they had been in the past, and made a bunch of deals and given up some prospects. But I think they're still doing good work. It's just a lot of the guys have left the system over the last year or two.
Yeah, it's hard to stay. I mean, eventually you got to dip a little bit as an organization for one reason or another. You mentioned being in 10 years in the top 10 is really amazing, because guys are going to graduate to the big leagues. You're going to have to trade guys at some point to get major league players in a pennant race and all kinds of different reasons. So, but great stuff. And the Rangers and Twins, both systems that, you know, they've dropped out now, but we'll see where they go from here. All right. So, Jonathan, you're down in Arizona, and I know Taylor Trammell is not the only guy you've gotten a chance to talk to. So anybody else stand out as all interview team guys in spring training as far as prospects go?
Yeah, normally when it comes to spring training, I like to talk about, like, well, this guy did this, or I saw him do this, but they barely just started playing baseball. I actually saw live baseball today for the first time in a long time, so that was fun.
Who's looked good stretching, Jonathan? Is there really somebody who's looked good stretching in the last?
Yes, some very good calisthenics. I did see Carson Fulmer throw a very good bullpen in live BP. And I talked to him. He was very good. My first day down here was White Sox camp, so it was like coming straight to the candy store, just because there were so many guys. You know, every camp's got interesting guys to talk to. Dan Altavilla is going to probably be the setup man for the Mariners. Does 100 miles an hour. Also a Pittsburgh guy who went to Mercyhurst College in Erie. So, you know, he's not a top 100 guy or a big name or anything like that. But, you know, he was good to talk to. Riley Pint, I got a chance to talk to. Top pick from last year, high school kid who throws 100. Thoughtful guy. He's really working on going from thrower to pitcher. And he learned during his pro debut in the summer that you can't just crank it up to 100 at the professional level. You're going to get hit. So he's working on his craft. And it's been fun, you know, bouncing around and sometimes meeting these guys that you only knew by their stat line or from video, and getting a chance to talk to them.
Very cool. And I had a shorter than usual trip to Florida last week, but I did hit 4 teams in 4 days, which means lots of mileage in Florida, unlike you out in Arizona, Jonathan. But I did Orioles, Rays, Red Sox, Yankees. talked to Chance Cisco. We love that name, and he's getting closer and closer. Asked him about working on his defense, and he said that's really been his main thing since he got to pro ball is the defense. And now he's really focusing in on his throwing, and that's the biggest thing. And he said it's been neat that he got to learn from Matt Wieters, and now he's getting to learn from Wellington Castillo, because obviously the Orioles losing Wieters bringing in Castillo. So it's two different kind of like catchers to pick their brain. So he certainly took something from that. And then, guys, Clint Frazier with the Yankees, I never thought I'd say this, but interviewing Clint Frazier, and he was very modest about the end of his 2016 season and after the trade to the Yankees and the fact that, as he said it, I didn't play good baseball for the first time in my life, basically, is what he said. In 25 games, he was about, he hit .228. He struck out a lot. But he said he really did feel a lot of pressure going to the Yankees in that trade. But he seemed excited to be part of such a talented organization now with so many young players and ready to get back on it. Were you guys at all surprised? Either of you can jump in. Maybe Jim, give this a shot. That Frazier's numbers did dip a little bit after he went over to the Yankees?
I mean, not terribly, just because it's such a small sample size. And there's some upheaval there. He was young for the level. So not really. I mean, I know talking to the Yankees, you know, they kind of echoed what you said, that they thought when I was doing an Instructure Link story, and talking to them about some of their outfield talent, that they thought he pressed too much, you know, that they thought that was part of it. But, I mean, at the time of the trade, he was 21 years old, and he played 5 games in AAA. So I'm not really that surprised that he struggled. It wasn't like he struck out, you know, excessively. I mean, the strikeout rate was kind of consistent with what he had done, you know, previously, you know, even in AA. You know, he just didn't, you know, hits didn't drop in. I mean, he did have 80 extra base hits in 25 games, but, I just think it was too much to read much into. So surprise, not really. I mean, that type of stuff happens.
He still had the long hair going, and he was ready to get to work with the Yankees for sure, and that's such a young, talented organization right now that is in, obviously, the top 10 and near the top of that top 10. All right, one last thing to touch on. Jonathan, you mentioned off the top you're with Team Israel right now before they head to Korea to open up the World Baseball Classic, and they'll actually open up the tournament against Korea in Seoul, and they're the very first game, Monday, March 6th, 4:30 in the morning Eastern time. So get ready to get up early for some of these World Baseball Classic games. But who's on that team right now? Who's working out with the Israeli team?
Well, it's kind of a mix. I mean, they have a little mini camp going on, and obviously the players who are in big league camps that aren't here, you know, like Ike Davis, who signed with the Dodgers, is not here. Ryan LaVarnway was here, but not for that long. But Cody Decker is here. Sam Fold is here. Jason Marquis, who has been making some noise about maybe attempting a comeback. And my theory there is that he started to get himself prepared for this World Baseball Classic and realized how good he felt and decided he wanted to kind of keep going. And then, you know, the rest of the roster is filled with minor leaguers. I mean, Nate Friedman, former Rule 5 pick, is here. Just cherry-picking the guys with big league time who are here. But it should be a competitive team. Korea and the Netherlands have some good teams, but I think that this roster should have a chance to advance at least to Japan to the next round if they play good baseball. So we'll have to wait and see. It's just sort of, as we've talked about on my trip to Israel and this in general, it's been fun to have these two worlds of mine colliding into one thing.
Yeah, very cool. And the World Baseball Classic, hey, it's, you know, spring training games, kind of, they're great when they first get started and everybody loves seeing live baseball. But then you get to that point where you're kind of like, all right, I'd like to see real live baseball. And the World Baseball Classic will be that to a degree throughout the month of March. So it gives people a chance to see their nations play. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And people, you know, land on different sides of it, how much they like the World Baseball Classic. I like it because it breaks things up in March every 4 years and gives you kind of something else to look at. So it'll certainly be interesting, and it gets started, as I said, March 6th with Israel playing the very first game, 4:30 a.m. in Seoul against the Korean team. All right, that'll do it for another Pipeline podcast. Great stuff, guys. And I think next time we talk, Jim, are you going to be on the road as well?
I will be. I'm heading to Arizona on Sunday, and I will be able to tell some camp stories. I was really disappointed. I thought you were going to tee me up there to talk about how in the 11th inning of World Baseball Classic games we're going to start the inning with runners on first and second base. But I guess we'll just let that go for now.
You know what? If it happens, we'll talk about it here on the podcast. But until then, I'm going to leave that one up. So that's going to do it for us. For Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in.